Welcome to this Touch podcast activity, which has been recorded for Touch Oncology. This podcast aims to bring you expert perspectives from a multidisciplinary team on how shared decision-making can be successfully integrated to optimise care of patients with high-risk early breast cancer. Leading breast cancer specialists within an MDT plus an early breast cancer survivor share their perspectives on the importance of shared decision-making, evidence for its effect on patient outcomes, and addressing the challenges of shared decision-making in daily practice. Financial support for this medical educational activity has been provided to Touch IME by an educational grant from Eli Lilly. In this podcast, a medical oncologist and a nurse specialist discuss the importance of shared decision-making and explore the elements essential to its success in patients with early breast cancer. Plus, an early breast cancer survivor shares her own experiences of shared decision-making during her breast cancer journey.
Hello there. My name is Professor Fran Boyle, and I'm a medical oncologist in Sydney, Australia. I'm the director of the Patricia Ritchie Centre for Cancer Care and Research at the Mater Hospital, and I also work at the University of Sydney in research and teaching. And one of the areas that I work in is teaching medical communication. So I'm very interested in today's topic, which is shared decision making. I'm joined for our discussion today by Professor Dr. Khatija Lynn Abdullah, a professor of nursing at Sunway University in Selangor, Malaysia, and Ms. Evelyn Ong, who's a breast cancer survivor from Singapore in the Republic of Singapore. Thank you for joining us, ladies. And the section we will be dealing with today is what is shared decision making and what elements are essential to its success in patients with early breast cancer. The key elements of success in shared decision making in early breast cancer include recognising that patients come from different backgrounds and adapting our own communication to what works for them. The sorts of things that are very important are that the information we give is clear and accurate, but also unbiased. And this is where sometimes the second opinion about treatment can be very helpful to patients. That communication of evidence also needs to address what the patient needs to hear, and that might be different from what we think they need to know. Also including their preferences, values, and needs, which might depend on their family circumstances, religious views, cultural preferences. So why does it matter? Well, there are lots of choices in early breast cancer treatment. Early breast cancer can be treated with systemic therapy before or after surgery. The surgical decisions can include mastectomy or lumpectomy, a sentinel node biopsy or an axillary dissection, reconstruction in various different kinds. And there are also a number of different post-surgical treatments, radiotherapy and endocrine therapy, about which choices can be made. And this is where the multidisciplinary team need to communicate well with one another, but also with the patient to ensure that nothing is missed on that long and sometimes quite torturous journey. So when we think about this long journey of breast cancer treatment, most important is the perception of the woman, the patient, and her risk of cancer recurrence, her risk of getting new cancers, and how she perceives the different treatment options can help her. And I know this is something, Evelyn, you've had to wrestle with in real life. Would you mind telling us a little bit about your story?
Sure. I will share a little bit of my background as well as the journey of my breast cancer treatment. I was diagnosed with stage 2 breast cancer in October 2017, and I discovered it through self-examination, although I do go for my annual mammogram. It was on the left, very close to my armpit, and if I did not lift up, I wouldn't know, I wouldn't even feel the tumor. And it was stage 2 because the lymph node closest to it was positive. So as you rightfully pointed out, there were a lot of decisions to be made, right? From the point where the lump was discovered, Initially, I have to see the breast doctor. She's the one who sent me for radiologies, mammogram, ultrasound, and a biopsy as well. Once that is positive and it's confirmed that it's a triple positive, then everything falls into place, right? Then I'll have to find an oncologist who's going to do more tests to determine the staging. And the breast doctor also explained to me what are the different options, what are the success chances, what's my prognosis of someone with a triple positive breast cancer, as well as someone of my age. So there was a lot of information to absorb right from the beginning. So a lot of decisions to be made. The first major decision that I have to think of was whether I want to go for adjuvant or a neoadjuvant treatment. And of course, there are pros and cons of each option. The decision was further complicated with one of my family members, because I have a brother-in-law who's a doctor, but he's not an oncologist, he's a general practitioner. And you know, his experience, his education was from 20, 30 years ago. And at that time, the prescribed treatment was to go for surgery first. Like the word he used to describe was remove the mothership and then use chemo to mop up all the cancer itself. But that is very different from what my breast doctor and my oncologist say today. And they're saying that, no, that's actually not what is being recommended these days. We usually recommend the patients to go through chemotherapy first so that you are able to tell how responsive the patient is to the treatment. And then before you go for the surgery. So that was that to me in the entire journey was the major decision. There are also little, very small decision that I have to decide as well. So things that doesn't seem like a big deal in the entire treatment, there's actually every point of it is a decision point that me as the patient has to make.
And at those points, no doubt, Evelyn, your personal preferences were critical. And Professor Abdullah, Evelyn has touched on something really important here, which is the role of family members in helping or maybe hindering even decision-making. And is this something that, from a nursing perspective, you feel is really critical? We understand that need to engage with family members as well.
Yes, thank you so much, Professor Frank. Absolutely, because especially in the Asian culture, we have what we call the cultural collectivism, where we really put family harmony as a very important component in whatever we do. So whatever decisions the patients tends to want to make, they tend to want to involve the family members. So that may include not only their husband, but their brothers, their sisters, their in-laws. So in that aspect, when we talk about sharing decision-making with the patient, we have to extend it and involve these family members so that there's no sort of conflict at the end of the day in whether to follow the doctor or to follow the family. So I really can sort of agree with Evelyn's situation where the brother says something that is very different from the healthcare professionals, really.
And Evelyn, I also wanted to ask you, thank you very much, Professor Abdullah, how much the nurses were helpful to you in helping sort out those decisions. I'm thinking particularly about the decision about mastectomy and reconstruction.
Well, for that particular decision, it was purely my own decision. I, of course, hear the perspectives from different people, including my care team. The minimum that they can accept is a single mastectomy. I think lumpectomy was not an option for me. So it's just decision whether I should go for a single or a double. Again, a lot of research, a lot of weighing the pros and cons of advice and recommendations given by the oncologist, the breast doctor, as well as the plastic surgeon.
Thank you, Evelyn. And it sounds like you're someone who's a very good decision maker in terms of weighing up the different pieces of information that you're given. And we know that some people are very used, in fact, before they even get breast cancer, to weighing up data, weighing up evidence, and thinking that through slowly with the help of their team. And we call those people theorists, and you often find them in jobs that require research or teaching, use of data, for instance. And that's where having very, very clear explanations, particularly without jargon, as you mentioned, can be most useful. Different kinds of patients come in category we call reflectors, and this is based on the work of Honey and Mumford. And they're the people who have strong feelings about what's happening to them and like to take a lot of time in decision making. Other women fall into a category we would call pragmatists. So they realise there's a job to be done, they just want to get on with it as fast as possible and to minimise interruption. And so sometimes what might motivate them to a second mastectomy is just that, you know, I never want to have chemotherapy again, I want to be done with this. And there's a fourth group of patients that we might refer to as activists, and they're the people who are very strongly influenced by the relationship they might have with their healthcare team, and very much feel the need for trust to develop with the people giving them advice. And they may be much less interested in the data, they're much less interested in why it's happening, but they're very interested in who's going to be with them on this complicated journey. Now, of course, doctors come in all those categories as well, but sometimes there's a mismatch between the way the patient might wish to make decisions and the way the healthcare professionals feel things need to be done. And in particular, if they need to be done quickly, that may be more difficult for some kinds of patients than others. So I don't know, Professor Abdullah, whether you've noticed some people are much more interested in the data and others have no interest in it and they just want it sorted.
Yes, absolutely true, actually, because each one of them have maybe very different learning styles. And when we talk about shared decision making, we need to ensure that they understand the information, and that is how they can make a decision. But however, in certain cultures, understanding doesn't mean that they can act on it. And that is where the context of it is also equally important, especially in Malaysia, where the religion itself got a very, very, a very, very strong influence in the, what they decide to do, despite having the knowledge. I mean, we have cases where, you know, women come to us with very late onset of breast cancer. And one of the things that they sort of said is that they knew they had something wrong, but they're praying hard that it is not what they think it is. So they suddenly coped with it until it was too painful, then it come to us. So that is where the shared decision-making sometimes is very difficult, because basically when they came to us, it was like very late onset. So the shared decision-making have to occur where it is early onset, then they have more choices and more informed decision. When it comes to us like in stage four, really, to be honest, there's really nothing, not much choice really for them.
The area where religion most likely occurs is in that group of patients who have a very reflective background, and where the diagnosis of breast cancer as a challenge or even a punishment maybe something that is perceived. And we see that in Australia in patients who have a great adherence to alternative therapies, and where they perceive the toxicity of Western medicine. And you see that in breast cancer as well. So people who want to fix why they have breast cancer rather than going, I don't know why I've got it, just fix it for me, which sounds like Evelyn's, Evelyn's approach. And so you're right, if you can't understand what that background is for someone with a reflective space, it's very hard to get them. So thank you both very much for your input about how things might be different in different parts of the world. And we will hear more on this topic shortly. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this Touch podcast. You can access more content on this topic on Touch Oncology at www.touchoncology.com. Don't forget, there are two other chapters in this series, so please listen in for further insights from the multidisciplinary team.